Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. This is episode 89 for Thursday, January 26th, 2011. My name is Ben.
And I'm Kai. Hello again.
Yay, two podcasts in a row with Kai. With us also, and almost as always, is Nikki the dog, who just came into the office, into our office studio, carrying her favorite sock chew toy. And we have Baggy the cat, who's decided to half be on my lap and half on the desk, purring. So if you hear an odd purring sound, that's Baggy.
And she's contributing.
Yeah, yeah, doing her part. supporting the team. So, anyway, one of the things we were going to... Did we finish our topic yet? Oh, I'm sorry, Baggy. I'm sorry. You wiggled.
And down she goes.
Down goes Baggy.
And now she's looking at us highly offended.
Yeah, and now Nikki's looking all guilty because she's like, I didn't do anything. Poor Nikki. Nikki's had a rough life. Nikki was born she spent the first, as far as I know, and this may be partly mythology, but as far as I can tell from Nikki's story, she spent a lot of her early life with a sibling we believe to be a sister. Do you know this?
Mm-mm.
That's Nikki fighting with her sock. She spent possibly a couple years very close with one of her siblings, so it was a very, very close relationship with two dogs, same size, mm-hmm. same nature, in the same house, and we believe that there was a little girl involved, a little girl owned them. And then, from what I understand, she was separated from both the little girl and her sibling at the same time and basically dumped in a pound. And or possibly a pet store.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was adopted by a family member. And then the family member ended up moving to a house that was not Nikki accommodatable. And Nikki really didn't like that anyway, because that the relative's house had multiple cats in the house, and the cats were mean to Nikki.
Mm-hmm.
And so... then they moved to the other house that had very steep, very slippery hardwood floors and very steep, slippery stairways.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikki literally couldn't make it up the stairways because she's a little dog.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't get up and down the stairways, and the cats were still being mean to her. So we adopted her over here, and this is really the first stable home that she's had in quite a while. And so she feels very out of place and very unsure.
Nervous.
Yeah, nervous.
But yes, mm-hmm. there's Baggy.
Yes.
The cat really doesn't, you know, bother her and aggress on her or whatever.
No.
In fact,
Baggy's cool with her.
The cat would love to play with her,
yeah.
you know.
And has tried to play with her on several occasions.
But she's very nervous.
Yeah.
She doesn't quite trust the motives of the kitty.
Yeah. And neither of them understands how the other plays.
Right.
Baggy wants to chase, and Nikki gets very uncomfortable when Baggy tries to chase her. Nikki wants to pull with a pull toy, and Baggy doesn't understand that game.
Anyway, so the dynamics of the animals at the Bad Quaker compound.
So what we actually wanted to talk about, oddly enough, we wanted to talk about the state.
Really? I would never have guessed.
Well, why don't you start? I can't think of a good intro, so you jump into it.
Well, I was... beginning this without calling out any names or singling out any people, I was at a community meeting for a local...
Bunch of you communists, huh?
Right. For a local...
health organization?
Health organization, yes. And at the meeting, there was...
AA or Anon or...
No, not anything like that.
Yeah, okay.
But at the meeting, there was a lady who was talking about... she runs a constitutional law classes and mm-hmm. basically teaches people what's in the Constitution and
what your rights are.
Right. And
because this had to do somewhat with food rights and
right.
food regulations.
Right. And at the time I was very amused by it. That's kind of my first reaction anytime I encounter constitutionalists. I just want to pinch their cheeks and go, oh, it's just so cute.
It's so cute you believe that.
Yeah. So that was, and I Facebook messaged about, how cute constitutionalists were. And then...
Nothing like making fun of people behind their back.
Right, right. I make fun of them to their face, too. But then... I got to talking with a friend of mine is going through the processes of leaving an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that the stages of an abuse, because I've been friends with her and kind of been with mm-hmm. her throughout the entire
mm-hmm.
Process. Yeah. And I realized that the stages you go through of an abusive relationship are the same stages you go through when dealing with the state.
Right.
And then suddenly it really wasn't that funny anymore.
Mm.
And it was really sad
yeah.
that, when you see a, and not just a constitutionalist, but there are other, stages as well. But when
right.
you see somebody in that stage of a relationship with the state,
mm-hmm.
It's not really that funny. It's really... sad that you're seeing someone in that stage of an abusive relationship.
And just to cover some of the thoughts on that, a stage of an abusive relationship can be complete denial.
Mm-hmm.
The abusive partner, maybe the abuse is not so dramatic that you lose days from work mm-hmm. and you end up in the hospital. Maybe it's light abuse.
Mm-hmm.
It's tolerable abuse.
It may not even be physical abuse at
exactly.
that point. It could
yeah.
just be mental, verbal.
Yeah.
And you don't in your mind classify it as abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are in this denial. And that stage, to your outside family and friends who can mm-hmm. see what's going on,
yeah.
there's nothing that they can do because
no.
they cannot no. bring it up to you.
No, and they can never, no matter what, they can never convince you
mm-hmm.
that this is going on because it's you're blind to it.
Mm-hmm.
You've decided to not see it. And this is a stage where most people are at with the state.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of the people out there, we make these, some people feel that these are derogatory comments when we say things like sheeple and things like this. And some people get really offended by that. And if I make, grazing sounds and bah or moo, I can see why people would be
right.
offended at that. But what we're really talking about is people... In these early stages of an abusive relationship, the state is an abuser.
Mm-hmm.
Everything the state accomplishes, it does through either aggression,
mm-hmm.
Through lies, or theft. Mm-hmm. So if everything that it does relies on one of those three methods, then everything in its relationship is abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you can tolerate it, even if you've decided not to notice it,
mm-hmm.
it's still abuse. Taxation mm-hmm. is abuse. Originally, it was, talking about the Constitution, originally, individual taxation was against the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government had no right, no authority in the Constitution to tax individuals.
Mm-hmm.
It was specifically outlawed by the Constitution. Of course...
The Constitution is meaningless.
And yeah, and that's the part, see, to come to grips with that, when you realize, well, first off, before you get to that point, so first thing is you're in this level of denial where you say, there's no abuse,
mm-hmm.
the state's okay,
mm-hmm. and
it's
if
a
you
good
do
state.
See, if you do see things like, oh, I didn't have his dinner ready on time and he hit me,
mm-hmm.
it's your fault.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you internalize that, and it's my fault.
I should have paid my taxes on time.
Mm-hmm.
This penalty is my fault.
If those people get tased, they deserve it.
Yeah, they shouldn't be out there in the street anyway. What are they waving all those signs for anyway? They're probably bad people, stinking, dirty hippies. What
mm-hmm.
are they doing that for? Well, yeah. And then there's the other aspect as well. Well, but my state's much better than other states.
Mm-hmm.
However bad my state might be, there's, you know, my neighbor over there, oh, that poor lady, her husband is just horrible. He's drunk all the time, and he's always, you know, well, this is a stage of denial. Mm-hmm. It's comparing your bad situation and finding somebody else you can say, well, they're worse off, therefore I'm okay.
Right.
Well,
I have no right to complain.
Yeah. So you hear this all the time from people. They say, well, you know, there may be problems with America, but it's better. It's the freest country in the world. No, no, it's not.
Right.
That's absolutely not true.
Right.
If you
that's
think
America, an absolute lie.
Yeah. If you think America is the freest country in the world, open up a vegetable cart.
Right.
And just go right downtown in your local city and start selling vegetables on a cart.
I didn't bring it up because I'm not the kind of person to really start these kind of arguments in public.
Mm-hmm.
But the constitutionalist lady pointed out that, you know, without the Constitution, you know, she brought up the Muslim law that, you know, you have
Sharia
to be
law.
Covered and all of this. And, you know, I was sitting there thinking, I was like, yeah, but they can have a chicken in their backyard.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah. They can sell raw milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They don't have to have government regulation controlling every aspect of their food supply.
Mm-hmm.
They're not forced to eat genetically modified food.
Through a friend of a relative, I know of this situation. There's a guy who worked a long time and built up a little bit of money. He's not what we would consider rich.
Mm-hmm.
But he had some spare cash, and he ended up through his work and through his travels, he ended up in Thailand. And in Thailand, he met a woman that he fell in love with and married. And so in Thailand, he was, because the little amount of money that he had here in the U.S., in Thailand, it actually had some value.
Mm-hmm.
So with his little bit of money that he had saved up, he was able to buy a nice little chunk of land.
Mm-hmm.
And on that land, he decided to build a little golf course. And on his golf, therefore, he could invite friends
mm-hmm.
from all around the world could come to his golf course and play golf on his golf course that he made himself. And, of course, when you're out on the golf course, sometimes somebody wants a beer or something.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically set up a bar. And he set up a mobile bar that he could move around the golf course. And he set up a clubhouse with a permanent bar. And then more people started coming out, even inviting friends. And so they started paying him to come and play on his golf course and drink his drinks and, mm-hmm. and eat at his clubhouse and so forth like that. And so he's making a good living now, owning and operating a golf course and a clubhouse with a bar and a mobile bar. And guess what? He didn't ask anybody's permission for any of that. There's no inspections. There's no licensing. There's nothing.
Now, that's not to say that you can have complete freedom anywhere there's a state.
Exactly.
Because you can't.
Exactly. Different states are different as far as,
you know,
how they oppress
going
people.
With the Muslim law,
mm-hmm.
They are oppressive in one area,
mm-hmm.
and they are not oppressive in the other area.
Right.
Well, here, you know, I can put on a short skirt and walk around and not be prosecuted for that.
Right.
But I can't have chickens.
Yeah.
You know.
And
but I can't. There are levels of
yeah.
things. You know, every state persecutes their own slaves
right.
in specific ways.
It's a good way to put it. And in the Thailand situation, so yeah, he can open a business. He can be an entrepreneur. He doesn't ask anybody's permission to do that. And he's not actually even paying any taxes mm-hmm. on it. On the other hand, if he was to, you know, put a blog on the internet and say bad things about the king of Thailand,
mm-hmm.
Or the royal family, I think it's a king, but whatever the big shot dude there with the funny outfit and the silly titles, whatever.
He's bald, right? And he has that British woman who came and they sing and they dance. That's that guy, right?
It's close. That was Siam. But even to say anything at all about the royal family in public, you go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And a jail in Thailand is not a place you want to be. You know, I wouldn't want to be in a prison in the United States. But a prison in the United States is a vacation compared to
right.
a jail in Thailand.
Right.
So
and,
so it is varying levels of oppression.
And I, you know, I take I take issue with that whole concept of, well, we're the most free. Mm-hmm. You can't have degrees of free. You're free or you're not free.
Yeah, I go with the bird.
You know, if you have a master and your master gives you certain privileges, yeah, you're not free.
Yeah.
You just have a lenient master.
Yeah.
Still a slave.
I think it was Charteroff that had the 9 stages of slavery. And he goes through and logically charts, you know, here's from total slavery, mm-hmm, and here's to a slave who only, you know, essentially a third of his income goes to the state, mm-hmm, to the master. And he can pretty much free to come and go, but he has to have his master's, mm-hmm, approval. But he's still a slave.
Yeah.
Even though he has, like, 70% of his time and his wages are his, and he can pretty much go and as he pleases, he still is not free to come and go as he wishes and do right. what he wants with his own property. Therefore, he is still a slave. And the example I use is the bird. You have a bird in a cage. That bird is not free. You have a bird in a bigger cage. It's still not free. Mm-hmm. You take the bird and you clip its wings, and you keep it in a confined area because, you know, can't get away, mm-hmm, it's still not free. You take the bird and you train it over a long period of time, like a falconer, mm-hmm, does with a trained falcon. It's still not free. Mm-mm. It's in a sense, it can fly out. It could fly away if it wanted to, but it doesn't realize that.
Right.
So in its mind, it's still owned by the master. Mm-hmm. So even though in every way it seems like the falcon is free, it is not free. It cannot, because it's not a conceivable thing in its mind. Mm-hmm. It cannot fly away. And going back to the stages of denial and so forth with abuse, a lot of people don't realize that the state is just a thought away from vanishing. Mm-hmm. And once you realize that, you don't have to, you know, if you're in a physical abusive relationship with an actual human being, mm-hmm, there are serious dangers to breaking up with that person. Mm-hmm. But with the state, well, let's go back to I've said enough on that. I'm taking over the conversation, and it was your concept to begin with. So,
well, I kind of had, for me, I kind of had this idea that there were 3 levels, and there are, you know, more fine tunes, but I think there are 3 main levels, which is where you're in an abusive relationship and you don't think you're in an abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. You're in complete denial.
Yeah.
There's no one who can convince you that you are in an abusive relationship.
That's where you use these tricks of your mind and you say, well, it's not as bad as that guy over there.
Right.
Well, at least he doesn't do this.
Right. And then you have the next stage where you know what's happening is wrong, but you still think that it's a salvageable relationship. You think,
right,
you know, well, yes, he comes home drunk, but mm-hmm, he's promised to go to AA and, you know, mm-hmm, he's promised to see a therapist. And I really think that we can get this thing worked out.
Yeah.
And, you know,
we're going to see a marriage counselor.
Right.
He keeps telling me we will as soon as we can afford it.
Right. You know, he was such a good guy when, mm-hmm, we first got together. And
yeah. I didn't think of the kids.
Yeah.
You don't want to just leave them without a father.
Right.
You know.
There's this level of justification as to why you can't get away from this, mm-hmm, person.
Yeah.
You know, and then it moves past that into the, this is not salvageable, I need to make plans to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you can't just leave.
Right.
You know, because part of being in an abusive relationship is making you dependent upon the abuser.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's one of the things the abuser tends to do.
Yeah, and they don't let you work, and they, you know, keep you on a strict, and they put you on an allowance, and they don't let you call your family members, and
they'll try to isolate you from your friends.
Mm-hmm. And the state is very much like a really abusive relationship in that if you actually do try to leave,
mm-hmm,
they will physically harm you.
Yeah, all the way up to death.
Yeah. They're the abusive person who, you know, when they realize that you're trying to escape, they, mm-hmm, actually physically lock you in the basement.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
yeah,
that, I mean, that's the level of abuse that the state will go to, mm-hmm, to prevent you from leaving.
Yeah. Up to the point of where the state would prefer you dead than free.
Mm-hmm.
And they've proven that over and over.
Yeah. And then Ruby Ridge? Wait, what was that?
Waco what? Waco what?
Yeah.
Burning bodies, what? Waco? Burning children, Waco, what? Yeah, they're there.
Yeah, and that's not, I mean, those are the most public ones.
Yeah.
But they're not the only ones.
No, uh-uh.
You know, it happens, it's happening to Amish people nearly every single day as we speak.
Yeah, they're taking a lot of heat. They have been probably the, if, you know, if we go back to using the excuse of how free and most free and stuff. Right. They have been left alone by the state mostly mm-hmm. for the last 100 and some years, you know, 180 years or whatever, however long they've been doing what they do. But that's coming to a very rapid end.
Yep.
And the state is going to make a very public display mm-hmm. of them. And at first, what we're seeing right now is the government, the state is doing this quietly.
Right.
Not really making a big deal out of it. But at some point, the state will demonize them. There will be some situation where they blame an outbreak of listeria or something on them. And then the state will demonize them, and they will be considered a cult, mm-hmm. and they will be, you know, they will be dealt with the way that the state only knows how to deal with people. It, you know.
Yeah, because the state cannot have people on the outside,
mm-hmm.
because that, you know, you can't have your sheep in a pasture with wild sheep on the other side.
Yeah.
You can't have that,
mm-hmm.
because that's...
Well, that's a problem with horses. If you're out in the West where you have a large ranch, if you have like a where we lived in the Mojave Desert, we had a 10-acre ranch, and on that we had a corral that was probably about I'd say we probably had a 2-acre corral, and then we had our individual horse stalls mm-hmm. and our barn. And we had a horse in there. And what happened was the horse that was in there was entirely tame, and it was a regular horse. And having that horse in there drew Mustangs out of the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come and essentially, you know, entice that horse. Like, dude, why you let them do this to you? You know? And so
that
we would
is so demeaning.
Yeah, and what is wrong with you? And so we would, like, early in the morning, you'd hear a fuss out there, and you'd look out in the back, and there's Mustangs out there encouraging this horse to join them. You know, and so.
And the thing with a horse is, you know, you as a human. Are much smaller than it.
Yeah.
And the entire horse-human relationship depends on the horse...
deciding to be
to
involved.
To do what you want it to.
Yeah, the minute the horse realizes it doesn't have to behave, you lose the game.
Yeah, and your options are killing the horse or letting the horse go.
Yeah, which you can't do back east.
Right. Because, I mean, becoming abusive
with the horse. Beat the horse into submission, which I'm not saying that that's good. I'm saying that you know, if...
Once that idea that there's an alternative to being a slave pops into that creature's mind,
mm-hmm.
that really has to be dealt with.
And that's exactly the position the state is in. The state has a very limited set of tools. And when it begins to dawn on the slave that this abusive relationship has to stop, you know, once you get to that stage that it really dawns in your mind, go back to the Murray Rothbard, I played with this a little bit. Murray did an article called Do You Hate the State? I may have referred to this and even in the yesterday's podcast, I can't remember, but... And Murray drew this line of where, yeah, you know, the perfect anarcho-capitalism situation would be great if we had it.
Right.
But what we got is not so bad.
Right.
You know, it's not that bad. Yeah, it is. If you really understand what the state is, you have to come to that position of where you recognize that you let all that brainwashing go away, and you let all the self-delusional go away, and you realize that the Constitution has never worked. Mm-hmm. The Constitution has, it's always been a one-sided thing. Mm-hmm. It's always been the thing that we hold at government and say, behave yourself.
And there's been other, you know, we are not the first government in the history of the universe to come up with the idea of writing down rules for how our government is going to go.
Right.
You know, and it never works, you know.
It's funny. You know, people talk about the Magna Carta, which it was a, you know, a foundational document and so forth. But the problem is the lords, as they, you know, they went to the king and forced the king to sign the Magna Carta. And as soon as they turned the king loose, he announced that his signature meant nothing because it was forced. Right. And he didn't obey the Magna Carta.
Right.
And so they had to literally capture the king and force him again to re-sign the Magna Carta. And this went on, I can't remember if it was two or three times, maybe four times. And then that king is dead and gone, and another king comes up and starts abusing it, and they're like, we got the Magna Carta. And the king's like, so?
Yeah.
I do what I want. I'm the king.
Right.
And they had to go back again and capture the king and force him to obey it. But then it still doesn't do anything, because at the second that he walks out of that, the state goes right back to doing what it wants to do, maybe a little slower at first, because it's just like that abusive relationship.
Yeah.
The woman's like, and I'm saying woman because that's the stereotypical process, is a woman with an abusive husband. But the woman says, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. So she calls the cops, and the police come out. And any police that are listening, you know this cycle. Mm-hmm. The police come out and they're like, you know, are you going to let us press charges this time? Are you going to press charges this time? Are you going to let us arrest him? Well, I don't know. And in her mind, she's thinking, oh, he's just going to get out and come back, and then he's going to be madder, you know. So the first couple times, she's like, no, go ahead. And he's okay. It's my fault. But then eventually it gets abusive to the point of where she tells the cops, no, I've had it. Take him away. Take him away. And so the cops haul him away, and then she refuses to press charges. And she won't testify against him. And so back he comes again.
Yep.
Boom! Right back at it.
Yeah.
Now, not immediately. Sometimes 6 months goes by, or a year.
Or, you know, he gets to the point where he's like, you know, I've got a problem. I understand. I'm going to try really hard.
It's going to be different this time.
And so, you know, eventually it lulls you into this false sense of security. And then something happens and it's justified again.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happens with the state. We believe, we hope, we believe. But look, it's unconstitutional, see? And then the state backs down. I don't know what I was thinking, you know. Really? A central bank? Okay. We'll just throw that central bank away. We won't have that central... Honey, stay with me. We don't have to have a central bank. A couple years go by. Hey, you know what would be nice? If we had a central bank. Oh, no, honey. It's okay. We won't have a fiat and currency. No. We'll get rid of that fiat currency right now. I promise. As soon as this war's over, we'll get rid of that fiat currency. And that's what the state did during the so-called Civil War. You got fiat currency, and you got, you know, the greenback was born. And so the government's just issuing fake money right and left. And the whole time, people are distrusting that. But honey, as soon as this emergency's over, we'll go right back to the way things were. Remember how things used to be, you know?
And because humans are humans, when you think back to the past, it's never as bad as it actually was. You know, you always think back nostalgically.
Yeah, we glamorize the past.
You know, no, he was abusive during high school, too.
Yeah.
You know?
And so then, eventually, you get to the point... Oh, let's go on the same thing. Poor Rand Paul. Poor Rand Paul. The other day, he was on his way... This is like a fairy tale, isn't it? Once upon a time, little Rand Paul was leaving Kentucky to go to the Senate. And he gets in...
Got his big boy britches on and his little briefcase, and he's going to go to Washington.
Little Rand goes to Washington. And we like Rand Paul. Yeah. We tease because we love him. We like Rand Paul. He's a good guy. So Rand Paul is going to go to Washington to go to, you know, the Senate and vote. I mean, that's the session is in. He has a duty. That's what he's hired to do. That's what they voted for him to do. He goes down there. and he gets detained by the TSA. Mm-hmm. Now, when a normal human being says a word like detained, mm-hmm. what that means is they stop you, they won't let you continue, and they won't let you leave. Mm-hmm. Now, the TSA doesn't, they absolutely deny that they detain anybody.
Right. They say, you can leave.
They say, well, we allowed him to stand over in this area. Yet they didn't let him leave. They yelled at him. Mm-hmm. They commanded him. They told him he had to stand there, and they threatened. This is what they always do. Mm-hmm. If you say, well, fine, I'll just go home. No, you're not going home. Mm-hmm. We'll get the cops. And they will bring in the cops. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they say, well, we don't detain people, that's just a lie. Mm-hmm. That's taking a word and twisting it around and making a different meaning out of it than reality is. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they detained him. And that's clearly against the Constitution. Mm-hmm. It was in the Articles of Confederation before it was even in the Constitution. You cannot stop a lawmaker when they're on their way to the Senate to vote on a law. You mm-hmm. can't do that.
And, you know, there's been a lot of uproar about this issue because a lot of people feel like he thinks that he's special and he doesn't have to do the same things that... And that's just not the fact of the matter. The fact of the matter is, right along, he's been one of the biggest naysayers against the TSA.
Yeah.
You know, he's been fighting to try to get the TSA to go away and to stop all of its ridiculous nonsense.
Right. So if he can pull this, mm-hmm. somebody might say, well, that's just a stunt. It's a trick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if he can pull this trick and make it work... Mm-hmm. See, then, from the constitutionalist point of view, that's a victory.
Right.
You got the abusive husband hauled off by the cops. That'll teach him. Mm-hmm. He's going to get out eventually. Mm-hmm. And when he does, he's going to beat you.
Yep.
Until you recognize that this situation cannot be contained by just more counseling.
Yep.
Or more... You know, more love. If I just loved him more. Well, he's having a hard time at work. He's under pressure. You know, we got those terrorists mm-hmm. that are trying to get us all the time. Mm-hmm. The
economy.
And the homegrown terrorists are everywhere. I mean, they're thick. You can't swing a cat by the tail without hitting a homegrown terrorist. Especially when you give a description of a homegrown terrorist as pretty much anybody who's not a straight-line Democrat or Republican voter.
Yeah, or who is that you just don't like.
Yeah, yeah. you know, maybe they're the wrong religion, or maybe they live in a communal situation that you don't approve of, mm-hmm. or maybe they have, any of a number of things that's not within the guidelines that are acceptable to your little Puritan society that you've created for mm-hmm. yourself. They must be terrorists because they're not like me. Well, not me.
You know, and the terrorist threat is huge, and yet, you know, you're far more likely to be killed by a cop than you are a terrorist or a
private citizen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we're getting to now. And that's statistics. That's not cop bashing.
No,
that's actual statistic.
And that's not killed in the line of duty as in you were resisting arrest. That's actual murder.
Yeah, the murder rate among cops is higher than the murder rate among regular citizens. Mm-hmm. And that's an actual statistic. That's not cop bashing. Mm-hmm. And that goes into the story I have to pick that back up and do a second episode of that. That there is a specific economic reason why that once you accept the concept of police... once you decide that there are people in society who put on a costume and are armed and can behave in a way that other members of society are not allowed to behave, mm-hmm. once you accept that as a fact, then a police state is an inevitable result. Mm-hmm. And there are economic laws that create that situation and cause it to happen. So I need to do that. I need to make the second in that series and because I laid the foundation, but I didn't really go into explaining the economic reasons why that takes place. But
back to the, because there's, like I was saying, with the three stages mm-hmm. of the abuse. The last stage is that you fully recognize you're in an abusive relationship. You realize that there's nothing you can do to fix the relationship mm-hmm. and that you have to get out of that relationship. And the more abusive the relationship is, the harder that becomes mm-hmm. because it's not just a, well, I'm going to go live with, you know, my mother and, mm-hmm. you know, you can't just walk out mm-hmm. of it. You know, it takes a lot of planning and it takes, you know, having these alternate plans in place.
And exterior support. Mm-hmm. You need a network of support of people who understand the problem and are willing to help.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back, I mean, that same issue with the horses. Mm-hmm. You know, once you plant in your mind the idea of, I am not free and I want to be free mm-hmm. and I know what being free looks like.
Yeah.
Then at that point, I think you stop being a slave.
Yeah.
You can be a prisoner.
Yeah.
You can be captured.
Yeah, this is an important distinction between a prisoner and a slave.
Mm-hmm.
One of the arguments against anarcho-capitalism, people will say, well, you use the roads, or you use the banking system, mm-hmm. or
do you pay taxes?
Yeah, or do you cash your check, your return, mm-hmm. your refund, your tax refund? Do you cash that refund check? Well, if somebody's stealing from me and they're dumb enough to give me, you know, $5 back, if somebody's robbing me, they've got a gun pointed to my head and they're holding my wallet and they're ruffling through my wallet and they're like, well, it looks like you got $400 here, but I'll give you $5 back so you can catch a bus home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take the $5.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer shooting them in the head. But since I can't, they have entirely the advantage in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
They're robbing me. They have the gun pointed to my head. If I can get $5 of my money back, I'm going to get $5 of my money back.
Right.
As a matter of fact...
And I think that's an important distinction because we're not saying, you know, nowhere in any of our discussions do we say it is immoral to attack the state.
Right.
We are saying
fully
it's
moral.
Useless
yeah.
to attack the state.
Yeah.
And it's not the way to go. And it's counterproductive.
Yeah.
It's not immoral. It's completely moral.
It
they are
entirely,
attacking you.
Yes. Yes. It is entirely moral. But it is, as moral as it is,
mm-hmm.
it's counterproductive in the short term because
mm-hmm.
they will beat you down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's counterproductive in the long term because if you fight the state using the weapons of the state will win.
Mm-hmm.
So both short term and long term, don't fight the state.
Right.
Avoid
the
fight.
You have to choose a moral and a practical avenue.
Using the abused partner in a relationship... There are a lot of ways that you could say, well, what she needs to do is just take a pistol and blow that guy's head off when he's sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but then you're going to deal with the state, aren't you?
Right.
And oddly enough, and this is really weird if you think about it, occasionally an event like that takes place where a woman has just been abused and abused and abused, and finally she just has had enough. And he's sitting on the couch, half asleep in a drunken stupor, and she steps up from behind and slices his throat.
Right.
And she goes to jail.
Mm-hmm.
The state prosecutes her in the vast majority of those cases.
Yep.
Sometimes the woman can get out of it. Sometimes with a good enough attorney, she can get out of it.
But most of the time, you go to jail.
Most of the time, she's going to go to jail. Now, how is that justice?
Yep.
And then now I'm going to be forced to the point of a gun to pay for her incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
How is there any justice involved in that?
Yep.
But, you know, so what I'm saying is it's entirely moral for her to step up behind him and pop him in the head,
mm-hmm.
for her to reach around from behind, slice his throat, for her to catch him asleep, tie him to the bed, put a bar of soap inside a sock and beat him to death.
Mm-hmm.
She is purely morally justified in doing that, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
But it's not pragmatic.
It is not. It's not on the short term. It may feel good, but, but on the short term, it's not good. And in the long term, it's not going to be
mm-hmm.
good. Because now she's going to have to deal with that violence the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same way with the state. If we confront the state like that, we will lose.
Mm-hmm.
And as we always say, how do we confront the state?
You know, you have to shut up put your head down, be quiet, and
develop networks of escape,
and get yourself to freedom.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the very first thing that you have to do is you have to stop being a slave. You know, a slave can never escape.
Right.
A prisoner can escape.
Yeah.
But a slave can escape.
As long as the mentality is in their brain, they're like that falcon. As long as the mentality is in their brain.
Or like that horse. If the horse hasn't decided it wants to be free, you can open the gate and it may go, but it'll come back.
Right. Right.
You know, and you have to get to the point where you say, there is nothing that is worth having this.
Yeah.
And I run into this argument all the time because people pose all of these gotcha. Well, what about this? Mm-hmm. You know, without the state, we wouldn't have whatever their pet little project is. Mm-hmm. And
their teddy bear.
Yeah. My answer is
their security blanket.
I would rather not have it than have the state.
Yeah.
I mean, pure and simple.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is, even if the free market cannot find a solution, which I fully believe in the free market. I fully believe that any problem that comes up, the free market can find a solution to.
Uh-huh.
But even if it couldn't,
yeah,
it's better to not have that solution than have the state.
Yeah.
Because the state doesn't provide solutions either.
On the other hand, just and as a disclaimer, just to throw this in, and I understand exactly what you're saying, I agree, but just as a disclaimer to throw this in, just to make sure we're clear on this, the state is made up of human beings believing in the state and therefore acting on those beliefs. So if the state can provide something like police, or if the state can provide something like fire departments or ambulance service or roads, or whatever that the state can provide, actually, it's human beings that are doing that. There is a need for this, and therefore human beings are responding to that need.
Right.
So if human beings are really the ones doing this, and the state is simply a belief system, then human beings would do it with or without the belief system.
Right.
Human beings would be motivated to do it in a free market, because they could make money doing it.
Right.
Human beings under the state do it because there's aggression if they don't do it. But even then, the services, so-called services the state provides, are only there to keep us passivized, pacified. They're like...
And they're the bare minimum.
Yeah. The falconer feeds the falcon. He doesn't feed the falcon too much, but he feeds it enough to where it doesn't get so hungry that it gets desperate and flies away.
Right.
So the state uses that in order to keep us dependent upon it, just like the abusive partner that you were talking about there. But once we realize in our head that, and that switch flips, and we realize we're not any longer a slave, because I will not be a slave to this, now you're just a prisoner. So... prisoner.
And I know that that seems like a, you know, a theoretical point, and it seems like, yes, but your situation has not changed any. You're still being abused.
Right.
And this is correct. You are. But at that point, you suddenly have the ability to think logically and to, you know, get yourself out of that situation.
Yeah.
And... you know, and it brings you to the point where if that relationship ends, because the other thing is, if an abusive relationship ends, before you get to the point where you've stopped being that, before you stop being in that abusive mindset, you are just going to go find another abusive person.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know?
Yeah.
And so
whether you accept that,
that
person back or you just find another one,
right,
it's still... it's...
You have to go to that point where you say, I am not going to tolerate that anymore.
Yeah.
And then when you get out of that relationship, you are free.
Yeah.
You're not going right back to that same relationship with a different person.
Yeah.
You know? And so generally what happens with the state is that people get fed up with it. And they throw it out before it has time to fully mature. And so instead of saying, we're just not going to replace it with anything.
Yeah.
They say, you know, we're going to get back into this relationship with this, with this new person who promises that they're going to take care of me and that they're, you know.
To totally white trash this out. What you've done is you've kicked out one Bubba and then you went down to the bar and you picked up another Bubba. and you're back at the trailer court with him. Mm-hmm. And so what did you really accomplish?
Yeah.
You know,
and you found someone bigger and meaner and stronger.
Yeah.
To go kick your abusive boyfriend out of the house.
He'll keep Bubba away. Oh, no.
Yeah.
What did I do? Well,
and that's the exact, because, you know, in the year 900 BC, mm-hmm. the state was not that strong.
Right. You could just leave.
And it was very fragile. Mm-hmm. And now we keep replacing it with a stronger and a stronger mm-hmm. and a stronger, because we have to get a stronger state to mm-hmm. kick out the old state.
Yeah, that's what revolution does.
And then, we've mm-hmm. just invited a snake into the house to get rid of the mouse. Ah, so now we need a coyote to get rid of the snake. Ah, now I have a coyote in the house,
That's the ratcheting effect of the state. So getting back to the idea of networking support and networking friends, it's very difficult for a person to leave an abusive relationship entirely on their own without help. Because part of the reason why is because they've been taught dependency mm-hmm. by the abuser. They've been taught this dependency.
Yep.
So that's one of the reasons why it's so important for all of us in the Liberty Movement to develop, literally like Underground Railroads, mm-hmm. we need to develop these, and I say this all the time. But
what, a Quaker who's trying to organize an Underground Railroad? Unprecedented.
The town that we're in here in Springboro, Ohio, was settled by Quakers, and most of the early buildings that they built with tunnels underneath them, mm-hmm. connecting them, secret rooms, because it was almost like the town was practically built for the purpose of smuggling slaves out of the South and getting them to Canada.
Yep.
But so as a Quaker, I'm taking up the next logical step in trying to free slaves. That's kind of the point.
Except the slaves are all of us.
Well, I believe it was, there was one of the people who's very famous for going into the South and getting groups of slaves and guiding them out and getting them to Canada. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the lady's name was, but she, a very famous quote, she said, "I could have saved a lot more of them if I could have just convinced them they were slaves." Mm-hmm. And this is something that's important to understand about slavery in the South, that it's not at all the cartoon version that you see in movies and TV and so
forth
like that.
There was horrific abuse happening.
There was,
but
isolated
was not
mostly.
The normal.
Right.
Because it can't be.
Right.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
And human beings will not tolerate that.
Well, let's say you're working your farm with horses. Mm-hmm. If you abuse your horses, you will get less work out of mm-hmm. them than if you treat them, you don't have to treat them like kings, but if you treat your horses so that they have proper bedding, proper food, proper supplies, proper grooming. You do these things and you get a lot more work out of your horses. Mm-hmm. And that was the way that those slave owners thought of the black mm-hmm. slaves in the South. They thought of them as a commodity and as an asset. So if you have a field of peach trees, you have an orchard of peach trees, and you go out there and just start ramming your tractor into the peach trees for the fun of it, mm-hmm. that's abusing your assets, and you're destroying your production mm-hmm. in doing that. So it's illogical.
And slaves were expensive.
Slaves were expensive. They cost a lot to maintain. So for that reason, there was a motivation to not treat them great, mm-hmm. but take care of them. And many of them being taken care of, I know this is controversial to say this, but they were comfortable in that. Mm-hmm. They didn't
have... And there's that fear again of, this is at least here, I know I'm going to get fed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen if I go out there.
Yeah. I'll have to go and search for work. Mm-hmm. I may or may not be able to find work. I'm still going to be abused because there's still rampant racism mm-hmm. everywhere. So I'm actually, in a way, it's a lot more dangerous to be out there in the free world than it is to be here on the plantation where the master's going to protect me. Because mm-hmm. the master doesn't let anybody beat us unless we deserve it. Mm-hmm. See, now we're right back to that again. Mm-hmm. Do you deserve it?
Right.
What are you going to do?
You know, you can't free people if they are still slaves, mm-hmm. you know?
You have to change your mindset, and you have to realize the slavery,
mm-hmm.
and realize there's nothing good that can come of that slavery.
Yep.
Whatever protection that you're being offered, whatever comforts that you're being offered those at the cost of you.
Yeah. And there's always a whip.
Yeah. Even if it's not hitting you today, the whip is still there.
Right.
The gun is always, Stefan Molyneux says, the gun is always in the room. It's always the gun in the room.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people ignore. That's what they refuse to talk about. But in this situation, in our metaphor, is that right?
I can never remember the difference between a metaphor and an analogy.
Yeah. Anyway, in our example, it's the whip.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not the whip is striking you, or the whipping boy who gets made an example of, it's the whip.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point.
Yep.
The fact that there is a whip means you don't own yourself.
Yep.
Unless you break out of the mindset of this.
And, you know, that's the idea of property rights. People say, you know, oh, I have a right to own a gun, or I have a right to put things in my own body, or, you know, you have to understand that the first thing,
mm-hmm.
before you can have outside property, you yeah. have to own yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to own your own mind.
In the 60s, the hippies used to say, in reference to the drug culture, they used to say, free your mind and your body will follow. Or mm-hmm. some would say, free your mind and your feet will follow.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of this was exactly like what we're talking about. First, realize in your mind. And you get this in your head and you free your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can work towards freeing ourselves. Mm-hmm. But first we have to get out of the mindset that the state is our friend.
I see this all the time. You know, the people who are like, you know, legalize it, tax it, regulate. No. Bad hippie. No.
You want to roll up a newspaper and whack them on the end of the nose. Roll up. No, never mind. Whack them on the end of the nose. Bad hippie.
Because
sounds like a bad Cheech and Chong movie.
Don't ask your masters for the permission to be free.
Okay, I'm going to say something. I'm going to say something really crazy radical right now. Gun permit. If you have to ask your master if you can carry a gun,
mm-hmm.
and if you have to go fill out a little paperwork and pay a little fee,
mm-hmm. take a little class,
sign some paperwork, ask your master. You don't have gun rights.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have squat. You have no right.
Mm-hmm.
You have nothing. If you have to ask your master,
you have a privilege from your master that they allow you mm-hmm. to.
Now I've heard it said over and over. Well, we need to exercise this right, or we'll lose it. We need to get down there, and you need to get your gun permit, and you need to exercise this right, or you'll lose it. If you're asking permission, it's not a right.
Mm-hmm.
Think this through. Think the words through. Analyze it in your mind.
Yep.
And tell me what part of this is not correct. If you have to ask permission, it's not a right.
And, you know, from a self-protective kind of perspective,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to bring attention to yourself and make your master angry and get yourself killed.
Right.
But at the same time, none of us can be free until we stop pretending to care about what this imaginary being thinks, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I think I brought it up on the last podcast, you know, or maybe it was on this one, I don't remember. but in Asia, they mm-hmm. have these markets,
yeah.
and they just have them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, okay, fine, we make the pretend, you know, no, this is not a market when the cops come by. But then you just go back to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be, you know, we talk all the time about a black market. There needs mm-hmm. to be a black market in everything.
Yeah.
And you need to just do it.
Yeah.
You know, you need to not ask permission. You need to not, and you have to understand when you begin to go down this path,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get stuff confiscated.
Yeah.
You're going to get harassed. You're going to get fined. You may get put in prison. You may lose your life.
Yeah.
But that's the only way that we can be free
mm-hmm.
is to just be free.
Yeah. And the wiser we can do that, mm-hmm. the less damage we have to suffer in the process. And the more of us there is, and the bigger of the network of us that there is.
And you don't have to be loud about it.
Right.
You know, you don't have to, you know, wear a t-shirt that says, I have an unlicensed gun, you know. You can be quiet about it.
Uh-huh.
But you have to make that, and it may not, you know, it may not be worth the risk for you personally to have that specific item.
Right, right.
But it may be worth the risk for you to, you know, organize an illegal herd share for raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
Or buy, you know, pay people to do things for you in silver or mm-hmm. gold or precious metals or, you know, whatever it is that is the level that you can do
mm-hmm.
to bring more freedom to your life.
Yeah.
It's better than not doing anything.
Right. Well, we've hit our time frame once again. And so badquaker.com podcast, badquaker.com is the website. And my email is ben@badquaker.com.
And I'm Kai, K-I, @badquaker.com.
Folks, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for listening. And for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com.
Robert Nozick developed something called The Tale of the Slave. It's very brief. Goes through 9 quick stages. Nozick invites you to imagine yourself as the slave in the story. Stage 1 is that you are indeed a slave subject to a brutal master who forces you to work for him and who beats you arbitrarily. In the second stage, the master lightens up a bit and he beats you only for breaking the rules, and he even grants you some free time. In the third stage, we add the additional dimension that you are one of a group of slaves subject to this master. And this master, based on principles that are acceptable to all of you, decides how goods will be allocated among you. In the fourth stage, you even get some time off. You have to work for the master for only 3 days per week. The other 4 days are your own. In stage 5, you even get to work wherever you want, but you have to remit to the master 3/7 of your wages to correspond to the 3 days out of 7 that you once worked for him. He also retains the right to recall you into service in emergencies and to increase at any time the fraction of your wages to which he lays claim. Then, in stage 6, everyone, all, let's say, 10,000 slaves, except you, are granted the right to vote. So they get to decide what is allowed and what is not allowed. They get to decide what fraction of your wages will be taken away and what outlets the money will be spent on. In stage 7, you still don't have the right to vote, but you are allowed to try to persuade those who can vote to exercise their powers in a particular way. In stage 8, you are granted the right to vote, but only to break a tie. You write down your vote, and if a tie should occur, your vote is opened up and recorded. No tie has ever occurred. Finally, in stage 9, you are fully granted the right to vote. But this simply means, functionally, that as in stage 8, in case of a tie, your vote carries the issue. But there has never been a tie. Nozick's question is this: at what stage between 1 and 9 did this become something other than the tale of a slave? That's the kind of mind-blowing question that makes you rethink everything you've been taught about taxation and society, government. It's the kind of thing that makes you skeptical of government propaganda from that moment on. And that's precisely why Nozick's question is never asked.